whatever the time of day, whatever the time of the night, we're here to serve you a big dose of genericness with your host, Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on a Thursday with Dale Campbell. Thanks so much for joining us here on Thursday, whether you're listening to us live or on your hard drive. We do appreciate you listening. Welcome into the second hour. We're continuing to follow this story that has basically swept the world by storm ahead of this long weekend. Tragically, right before this long weekend, it's the attacks that have occurred in Brussels, in Belgium. According to thetelegraph.co.uk, there were two attacks that occurred. One at the international airport reportedly near the American Airways kiosk and the metro station. 31 people have been killed, according to the Telegraph. I have seen that number up around 40, but this is what I'm reading. And 270 people have been injured. The third suicide bomber involved with the attacks was the fugitive Paris bomb maker. The Turkish president has come out and said one suspect was deported from Turkey to the EU. The Paris terror cell survivor travelled to Birmingham before the attacks last year. Belgium rebuked for chaotic passport control 3 weeks ago, which ISIS is now declaring that they stole a ton of Belgian passports to distribute it to their terrorists. And families are still waiting to hear from victims of the attacks. Now, to give you a bit of a breakdown on how the attacks happened, they happened as per follows. Local Belgian time, the immediate play-by-play, if you will. In local Belgian time, on the 22nd of March, at 8 a.m, airport explosions occurred. Evacuations began. Passengers were urged to stay away from the building. At 8:40 a.m, all flights were suspended. Nearly 20 minutes later, an hour after the first explosions, the metro station blast. That happened around 500 meters from buildings of the European Parliament. The threat alert escalated from a 3 to a 4. The maximum is 4 in Belgium. At 9:30, the Belgian metro system was closed. At 10 o'clock, all public transport, including trains, trams, buses, were shut down. At 10:30 a.m, local Belgian time on the 22nd, residents were urged to stay inside. At 12 midday, security was tightened at nuclear plants. At 11:45, rather, students were told to stay inside. Later in the afternoon, at 4 o'clock, 3 days are to be dedicated, Belgium officials say, following the twin attacks in the city. 3 business days are to be held for mourning of the victims that were lost and injured in this system. At 4:20 p.m. on the 22nd of March, ISIL takes responsibility for the attacks that took place. Now, we had a few pieces last hour, a few different perspectives. Now, a lot of people are covering the same thing. Now, we're gonna sort of flip it around. We try and bring you some opinion pieces, and we try and break them down as well as we do try and bring you the facts. The facts isn't the questionable. Where we bring you the, you know, whether we bring you the facts is another story. The facts we do bring you are cross-checked, and we do cite sources at the best of times. But I will say this. One thing I will say is the before we do bring you the other thing, more facts on the case, who are the suspects? The suspects are the Barocchi brothers. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that incorrectly. Brother number one, Kaid. He was a suicide bomber at the metro station, which killed 20 people. He is suspected to have rented a house under a false name in the Forest suburb of Brussels, raided by police in connection to the terror attacks. The second brother died in the airport attack that killed nearly 11 people. Brother number one, by the way, was sentenced to 5 years probation in February 2011 for carjackings. Brother number two was arrested for 5 years in prison for opening fire on police with a rifle during an armed robbery on a stockbroker in October of 2010. There is a third suspect in question. That is the man beside the two brothers wearing a white jacket and a hat. Some media outlets have identified him as the ISIL commander who made the bombs for the Paris attacks, but nothing has been confirmed as of this recording. At 11, bit after 10 past 11, on the 24th of March. Now, we're going to bring you, and it's a long weekend, so whether you are a religious person or whether you are not a religious person, Easter is a religious holiday. So, and it being, these attacks being Easter week, there is going to be some ties within the religion. No, I'm not going on my religion rant again because I learned that mistake the first time. If you want a religion rant, please go back and listen to my thoughts on the Paris attacks. So that is a religious rant and a half. I think I went on for about 10 minutes on that rant. Actually, it was about 10 minutes. I edited it down, did a nice little package for you. But yes, so it was about 10 minutes when I went on a rant about the Paris attacks and linking this sort of stuff to a religion. But I will say this. A pastor in Adelaide, not a pastor, although an Afrodio right now would be nice, yes. But a pastor has offered his words in relation to these attacks. With take it or leave it, it's a religious holiday coming up over the long weekend. It's not just a chocolate eating exercise. Philip Freer is his name. To remind people that love and life triumphs. Quote, the biblical truth invites us to not lose courage in the face of human cruelty or to lose hope on account of apparent triumph of evil and despair, Dr. Ferrer said. President of the Uniting Church, Stuart McMillan, appealed for a serious national convention on Indigenous solidarity. That is a different topic. Not that that is not important. Oh my God. I'm not saying that that is not important. That is just not relevant to the story. That's just not the story. Melbourne Catholic Archbishop Dennis Hurt said that appealed for communities to run forward with open hands to advocate the plight of refugees, victims of violence, and all who feel abandoned and lost. Quote, we are rarely conscious that such a toast is a prayer for health, healing, safety, happiness for ourselves and each other, he said. And we've got to remember that Easter is a time where, sacrifice was made, whether you believe it or not. It's something that I know I'm losing listeners by the millions now, but you gotta at least acknowledge that it's something Yeah, it's something that happens. So, yeah, it is what it is. Now, there's been stories from victims of these attacks that have come out. We talked about him last hour. Leopold Hiak became the heartbreaking victim of what his teachers described as a robotic act. The 20-year-old St. Louis University student was on his way to his final classes on the holiday break. He boarded the Melbrick subway station, where he was minutes later, a large bomb was detonated. Oof. He was one of the 31 dead and the 270 injured. His family, like so many others in the last 24 hours, took to social media to appeal for any information on their loved ones. The university's rector, Pierre Jadol, announced on social media, quote, "I am very sad to inform you of the death of Leonard Hackard. There are no words to describe our dismay of the news. All our thoughts and prayers are with his families and relatives." Of course, there are people, pleading out for this young man who studied law, by the way, at the university. Classmates, made their way to you know, give their support for the friends and families of this. The Federation of Walla Bushels announced on Facebook that one of its employees, Oliver Dempsey, was killed on the Melbourne Metro as well. Our thoughts are with their family, it said. Other victims as well. Swedish national Jonah Algrim is among the missing. She is missing. A woman from Moscow was also killed in the metro attack, according to Moroccan news agency MAP, which said three other Moroccans were unaccounted for. At least 21 Portuguese nationals were injured, Minister Jose Luis Cadro said, according to Lusa news agency. The French Prime Minister said that the 10 French nationals had been injured, four of them seriously. In London, one was missing, four were injured, three of whom were being treated in hospital. Three Mormon missionaries and a U.S. force member and his family, including four children, were among the hurt Americans. One of the missionaries survived the Boston bombings, we're learning, as well. New York siblings Shasha and Alexandra Penosky called their family from Brussels Airport on Tuesday morning to let them know they arrived safely for their trip home. That is some welcoming news. Then there was a loud explosion. So... this article goes on as well about people's pleas on Facebook to find stories of victims and the like as well, and it's a sad tale. It's a very, very sad tale, and it keeps happening, and it's unfortunately it's the news, and we bring the news, and it's something needs to be done. And if nothing's done, it's going to keep happening. It's like if a kid throws a tantrum, and doesn't know to stop, it's going to keep occurring. Just Just my two cents. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show on a Thursday evening, hope you're having a good evening. Hope you have a good long weekend planned as well. As we continue, we got the heartfelt story to lift all of our spirits up. And holy moo cow. We've got a heartfelt story of the week. We're gonna put that out there. We're not even gonna tease it. Let's just say it's just a trek across the desert like no other. As we continue, it's 11:20.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? This is JD from How It Stacks here to talk to you about ProXPN. It is a private VPN, which basically means it is going to mask your IP address, protecting your data. So if you're out on the interwebs doing things you might not need to be doing, or if you're banking online overseas, it will help mask your data and keep it completely private. And you can do this for only $6.25 a month regularly, or you can use Geek20 for 20% off. So it's a pretty stellar deal, guys. And I'm just going to be honest, with all of the stuff that we've had going on, it's a good idea to invest in something like ProXPN.com. So I am JD, and I approve this message.
This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Thanks so much for joining us here on a Thursday on the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Glad you could be with us. It's timing! Yay! Slow clap, perfect timing, ladies and gentlemen. It's called excellency. Now, have you ever done a marathon? No, I didn't pull this story out because A, it's an Australian, and B, I've done half a marathon by design. I didn't attempt a full marathon, I only ran half of it. I did half a marathon. A half marathon, I should say that, not half a marathon. Important where you put the word "ah" there. But anyway, so this lady, she isn't going to... No, it's not because I put the story in because that's the case. I put the story in because I thought I needed a feel-good story of the week. You know, with all the politics and, you know, the attacks in Belgium, all of that stuff going on in the news, I put something into the lineup. God damn it. My show, I've got the microphone. An Australian woman finishes 40 desert marathons. 40. Exhausted after wearing out 8 pairs of shoes in 40 marathons across deserts from Antarctica to the United States, Mina Gali hopes her runs will inspire other peoples to safeguard the planet's fresh water supplies. The 45-year-old woman, holy cow, 45, oh wow, okay, suddenly I feel old, completed the last marathon to raise awareness about water shortages across 7 deserts, 7 continents, 7 weeks on Monday near Las Vegas, Nevada. The finish coincided with Tuesday's World Water Day in the UN calendar. Quote, "I'm in shock, it's all over," she told Reuters by telephone, saying her legs were worn out after running a total of 1,688 kilometers. So km 2 miles. Let's do this real quick. It is 1688. 1,048.875 miles. That is a long, long run. She said this is the first day she's had to wake up and she hasn't had to run. That, I'm all in. My final count is 8 pairs of shoes. She worn out in desert in Spain, Jordan, Australia, Antarctica, South Africa, Chile, and the United States, she said. Gale said that people she met or connected via social media made pledges to cut water usage totaling 100 million litres, including with simple messages such as eating more vegetarian meals. Crops take far more water to produce than meat. We are in a massive water crisis, she said, urging more actions by individuals to save water. Climate change is disrupting weather patterns around the world, something a UN expert panel said will cause more droughts, downpours, and floods. Her hardest time is to keeping her thirst at bay was in Australia, where temperatures were up to 47 degrees after minus 20 in Antarctica. Galay, who runs a runs Thirst, a charity seeking to educate people in the need to reduce water consumption, said it was hard to sleep in a hotel room after so long in a tent. She said missed a view of the stars in the night sky. You know what? I'm actually going to applaud this lady. Wow. 40 marathons worth of distance for a good cause. How does she do it? I complained about my legs being sore after a half marathon. I am not even gonna go there. That is fantastic. That is a fantastic effort on her part there, and I hope she's doing more, because she has a lot going on. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show, here on a Thursday, right ahead of the long weekend. I hope you're not running 40 marathons over the weekend. It'd be physically impossible, because that would be. As we continue, we have an update on New Zealand voting for a new flag. They had their referendum, and we'll give you the results here momentarily. Meanwhile, President Obama had his infamous visit to Cuba. Lots more to get through in this last hour of the program. Thanks for joining us. It's 11:31. 11:31.
Finally found the most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on Thursday, here on the Generic Live Show. Thanks for joining us on Thursday. You know, it's good to be here. It's meant to be a Wednesday, but you know, we thought we'd push it back because I say so. No, that's not the case. I had a working group come up last night that I couldn't do the show. Plus, it's a long weekend this weekend, so, you know, right before the long weekend, you know what you want to do? You want to listen to the Generic Live Show. You've got nothing else to do this long weekend. No, I'm just kidding. You know, you don't have to listen to the show if you don't want to, but we do appreciate if you do. You know, we do appreciate you do have a lot of options for your shopping needs, and we do appreciate you. No, I'm just kidding. Real life careers getting in the way of hopes and dreams. Now, New Zealand, we an update into a story. An update into a story that had, that we had reported on this show, by the way. New Zealand held a referendum to change its flag to kind of sort of separate itself from the British Union, but I'm not too sure because the new design would have been relatively close. New Zealand, though, have rejected the change to their national flag. New Zealand's voted in favour of keeping the current flag after a 17-month exercise costing New Zealanders $26 million. That is $23.18 million Australian. New Zealand Prime Minister John Key, who was an advocate for the change, accepted the people's decision by stating, quote, New Zealand has voted to remain our current, to retain our current flag. I encourage all NZers to use it, embrace it, and more importantly, be proud of it. Created by Kyle Lockwood, it beat four other potential flags in a preliminary referendum last December. Quote, I voted to keep the flag, not because I don't like the idea of change, but because the proposed one is ugly and a bit embarrassing, Wellington resident resident Sarah Newbold said. In a compulsory referendum, by the way, the current flag won 56.6% of votes, with the proposed one receiving 43.2% out of 2,124,507 votes. These results did not include any ballots that were already in the post, and they have not been received. The final results are not expected to significantly change and will be released on March 30. So they probably won't change. It's a 12% margin, so I don't think it will change. So yeah, well. The multi-$1 million price tag for the flag referendum caused some grumbling by voters and opposition politicians, but no major political fallout is expected in New Zealand. Finally. Thank God, because that's the last thing we wanted is political fallout in New Zealand over a flag. Can anyone detect the sarcasm yet? But these things do stir up a lot of trouble. And of course, celebrities chimed in on this. You know, the one and only Richie McClaw, former All Blacks captain, chimed in his support of the new flag because he realised the moment when he decided a new flag would be great for our country is running out onto the field and seeing two flags that looked very, very similar. Ah, so here is New Zealand separating themselves from Australia. Here we go. Oh, yes. So there you go. One of the more quirkier designs that didn't make it, though, which I really, really wanted it, was a native Kiwi bird shooting lasers out of its eyes. I really, really wanted that. Before we get to President Obama, I really want to get to this breaking story of Bindi Irwin. This has been really people have really been driving this into me to try and cover this. Bindi Irwin got her license. Whoop-de-doo, move on. See, I said it. There you go. I said it. Are you happy? Are you happy I said? Are you happy? Are you happy I mentioned Bindi Irwin? Please tell me they're happy I mentioned Bindi Irwin. But she got to drive her dad's old truck. So that's something at least. You know, a little bit of sentimental value. I wonder if Bob Jr., as I like to call him, because it gets confusing between Bob Sr. and Bob Jr. But Bob Jr., I wonder if the truck will be around for when Bob Jr. gets her license. Bindi Irwin is growing up so quickly, I will say this. She's growing up. She was only a little kid running around next to her dad not too long ago. And now she's got her own television show. She's got a license. Scary, you know, scary stuff. Moving on promptly to more business. That's not about Bindi Irwin getting a license. As President Obama in Cuba I will play. I will play. There are two bits of audio that I want to play from this article. President Obama did comment on the attacks in Belgium this week. 51 seconds. Here is President Obama. A whopping 50. What's not to play about this ad? But 51 seconds. The leader of three worlds spared 51 seconds. Here we go. President Obama in Cuba.
Please indulge me. I want to comment on the terrorist attacks that have taken place in Brussels. The thoughts and the prayers of the American people are with the people of Belgium, and we stand in solidarity with them in condemning these outrageous attacks against innocent people. We will do whatever is necessary to support our friend and ally Belgium in bringing to justice those who are responsible. And this is yet another reminder that the world must unite. We must be together, regardless of nationality, or race, or faith, in fighting against the scourge of terrorism. We can and we will defeat those who threaten the safety and security of people all around the world.
That is the leader of the free world, President Obama, commenting on the Belgian attacks. In that speech, by the way, that's why I still played it. I know it's going on about it. But President Obama, what is this audio? President Obama's visit to Cuba. Is this a report? We'll play some audio, by the way. Here's some audio of President Obama in Cuba. And no, we're not talking about what's new. President Obama's going down there and talking about lifting the embargo that has occurred basically since the Cold War between Cuba and the United States. Let's see what this audio is.
One person who was in that press conference, can talk to just the historic nature of it, is Jen Psaki, who's the State Department spokesperson. You're with me. What was it like being there? This is the first press conference Raul Castro, I think, has ever given.
By the way, this is from... this is a CNN reporter, by the way, speaking.
It is, and believe me, President Obama has done probably hundreds of these over the course of time. So I think it was a historic feeling in the room. It was really interesting to hear him respond to some very difficult questions about human rights, about Cuba's record, and it really showed that there has been some progress made in terms of engagement and an ability to discuss some of these tough issues we haven't been able to do for some time.
Exactly, and there was this sort of very nice sort of people-to-people kind of vibe going on there. Mm-hmm. They did seem quite casual with each other. Mm-hmm. But these tough questions are the questions that many people want the president to ask.
Yes.
And that there isn't a sense that he's going to go soft on Cuba for commercial access.
Right. Nor should he. And frankly, there's still a road to travel here, and everybody knows that. But the fact is, for 60 years, we had a policy that wasn't working. It was broken. You know, there's that old saying, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, you don't have a different result. It's the definition of insanity. And that was the case here with our policy. So the fact that there was a situation where President Castro was speaking publicly, had to answer questions from a free media, that's an important step forward. The fact that one-third of Cubans are self-employed, they're not dependent on the regime because of remittances being sent, because of the change of U.S. policies, that's significant. So there's more that needs to be done, but I will tell you, we had so many businesses that wanted to come and travel with us. We had 37 members of Congress. There's a big tide of change happening, at least in the American perspective, and we think that's going to have a huge impact here, too.
The political is clear. The personal also quite obvious. Mm-hmm. When Air Force One came in, we were watching it mm-hmm. literally behind you, slowly coming into land here in Havana. What was happening inside Air Force One?
Well, I have to tell you, after 7 years of being president, there are a few things that get you out of your seat when you're landing. And the president was up with all of us. We were looking out the window, just wanted to see what it looked like on the ground. And it's just been an incredibly exciting trip already. And we still have a day left, a baseball game, an important speech that will be hopefully broadcast around the country, which will also be significant. So it's been a good trip so far.
Okay, Jen Psaki, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That was Jen Psaki, the White House correspondent, talking to a CNN reporter. It's time to lift the embargo, President Obama told Cuban officials and dignitaries. I can't pronounce words. Gathered in Havana, including President Castro. Even if we lifted the embargo tomorrow, Cubans would not realize their potential without a continued change here in Cuba. Obama's landmark visit to Cuba follows the December 17th, 2014 agreement by normalizing relations between the U.S. and Cuba. More than half a century of estrangement. Thank you, Associate Producer whispering in my ear. Castro first sent senior president to visit Cuba since 1959. His remark on the president's visit on Tuesday is unimaginable just a few years ago. His presidency and even the outgoing presidential campaign are examples of the benefits and opportunities available to Cuba as it embraces change. There are still differences, Obama acknowledged. I will not force you to change, said. Outlining the belief that every person should be equal under the law and that citizens should not be free to speak their mind without fear. That line drew applause from the crowd. Not everyone has to agree with this, Obama says, but I believe that human rights are universal. You know, yeah, well. You had two Cuban Americans in the Republican Party that leaned against a legacy of a black man who was president, while arguing that they're the best person to be the Democratic nominee, who will be a woman or a Democratic socialist, he said. Wow, really, really, really rooting for your own party there, Obama. Really, just hang on. I need to flush that thought out. Really, really going for. Whoa, excuse me. Really knocking my microphone over there. But really going for the message of towing party lines when you say it's either a woman or a Democratic Socialist or a Republican. I'm sorry. That's way too funny for me. But anyway, it's just interesting to frame that in a... coming from a Democratic president. Since 1959, we've been shadow boxers in a battle of geopolitical politics and personalities, Obama said. I know the history, but I refuse to be trapped by it, Obama said. Obama's historic visit to Cuba. Ladies and gentlemen, well, that's a wrap on that story. As we continue here on a Thursday on the Generic Live Show. Well, Disney has a lot of theme parks. This microphone is really annoying me sometimes. Disney has a lot of theme parks. But I bet we have a theme park. A Disney theme park you did not know about. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show. For a Thursday, thanks for joining us on a Thursday. It's 11:50.
สีขาวเป็นประกายนิราตรีไม่มีรอยเท้ายามที่มองในดินแดนอ้างว้างร่างผู้คนมีเพียงเรานี้ที่ครอบครอง
This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on a Thursday. We're having a bit of fun now. Here we go.Alrighty, thanks for joining us here on Thursday with Dale Campbell here on the Generic Live Show. I guess the language of that rendition of Let It Go, it's Thai. Oh, wait, I was meant to let you guess. Well, you know, there you go. Thanks for joining us here on a Thursday. Hope you are going to have a good weekend. You know, we want to make the weekend more enjoyable for you. Now, why Disney? Why Let It Go, first of all? Because, you know, Disney. It's a Disney story. And what's not to love about getting around copyright than playing Disney songs in other languages? Anyway, I know that's not how it works. You don't need to tell me twice. Now, you might know about Disney's large array of theme parks, but you might not know about this one, Disney's River Country in Bay Lake, Florida. Opened in 1976 and was the first of the multi-billion dollar corporation's water parks. It was a water park. But since closing in 2001, it was left to rot and crumble for 15 years, according to photographer Steph Lawless, who captured these creepy photos. Now, it's a very visual one. It's a very visual photo, but it's worth a look at if you do look it up. He claims that since being banned from all of Disney's parks for taking some incriminating snaps... He claims he has been banned from all of Disney's parks for taking incriminating snaps. Oh, okay. That was a sentence. Okay, apparently. In its heyday, River Country was full of excited children and their families splashing around in its pools and squealing down its slides. But in 1980, it was struck by a tragedy when a young boy visitor died from a rare Ebola in the water swam up... his nose and attacked his brain and nervous system. Oh no. Discovery Island, the only Disney water park to close, is just located 300 feet away, and Lawless claims that he has also left to go to the wreck and ruin. Writing on his Facebook page, Lawless said, "Officially banned from Disney World for life," which is ironic because I was already banned for Disney for life after they raised ticket prices. Disney is upset with me, but why do they have to be upset with someone who gets so close to the abandoned Discovery Island? What are you really hiding, Disney? No corporation should be powerful enough to hide the truth and not to clean up their own mess. Lawless says he has been told to stay away from all Disney World sites despite... renting a boat from the company illegally and capturing the image using a robotic drone by Atrial Robotics. In an email to Daily Mail, Lawless says his interview workers based in Bay Lake, who allegedly informed him that the waters are much too dangerous to swim in. He claims he told Disney boats and nightly fireworks display polluted the lake so badly that people who fish there aren't to eat what they catched. Lawless posted images on his social media pages ahead of next month's 40th anniversary of opening of River Country. It's It's interesting. Wow. It does look creepy, but there's something good about it. There is a gallery here. We will post this, but it's creepy. Hey. But it feels like a ride. It definitely does. It's interesting. Definitely not something that I'd want to go hang out. Wait, hang on. Isn't 4.5 feet 1.4 meters anyway? But anyway, we will be posting. We'll post this link up so you can have a look at the photos. But there you go. Disney has an abandoned theme park. Who would have known? Anyway, that about does it for us. Thanks for joining us here on the Derek Live Show. Make it a great weekend for you and your family. Don't eat too much chocolate and don't get too sick. Happy Good Friday to all. It's 12 o'clock.
This has been a Chef Wonder Media production. For more, visit chefwondermedia.net. Delivered fresh to your earholes. Copyright 2016.
This has been a podcast of the Geek AM Media Network, where you put your geek in and geek out. For more geeky goodness, head over to geek-io.net. Copyright 2016.